Toxin by Robin Cook. Continued. Cassette 6, Side 2. All at once she stood up. "Excuse me, Dr. Regis," she said out loud. "I'm afraid we're going around in circles. This is all hearsay, and therefore smoke and mirrors as far as I'm concerned. I'd like to help you, but I can't at the moment. At least, not until you have something tangible, something that a story could be based on." Kim pushed himself up off the low couch. He could feel his anger returning, but he fought against it. Although he didn't agree with Kelly's position, he had to admit he understood, and the realization only renewed his determination. "All right," Kim said resolutely. "I'll get something substantive, and I'll be back." "You do that," Kelly said, "and I'll do the story." "I'm going to hold you to that," Kim said. "I always keep my word," Kelly said. "Of course, I have to be the one who decides if the evidence is sufficient." "I'll make sure there's no ambiguities," Kim said. Kim exited the house and ran down to his car parked at the curb. He wasn't running because of the rain, although it had increased in intensity while he had been in the Anderson house. He was running because he'd already decided what he was going to do to satisfy Kelly's need for proof. It wasn't going to be easy, but Kim didn't care. He was a man with a mission. Kim made a U-turn and stomped on the accelerator. He didn't notice Kelly standing in the doorway of her house or see her shake her head one final time as he sped away. As soon as Kim made it onto the freeway, he punched in Tracy's phone number on his cellular phone. "Trace," Kim said with no preamble when she answered. "Meet me at the mall." There was a pause. At first, Kim thought the connection had been broken. Just when he was about to resend the call, Tracy's voice came over the line. "I took you at your word. I've made arrangements for a funeral service." Kim sighed. At times, he was able to put Becky entirely out of his mind. Thank God for Tracy. She was so strong. How could he face this tragedy without her? "Thank you," he said at last. It was hard to find the words. "I appreciate your doing it without me." "It will be at the Sullivan Funeral Home on River Street," Tracy said, "and it will be on Tuesday." "That's fine," Kim said. He just couldn't bring himself to think too long or hard about it. "I'd like you to meet me at the mall." "Don't you want to hear the rest of the details?" Tracy asked. "At the moment, meeting me at the mall is more important," Kim said. He hoped he didn't sound too cold. "Then I'd like to ask you if you'd come back with me to our old house." "How can going to the mall be more important than our daughter's funeral?" Tracy asked with exasperation. "Trust me," Kim said. "You can give me the details of the arrangements when I see you." "Kim, what's going on?" Tracy asked. She sensed an excited anticipation in his voice. "I'll explain later," Kim said. "Where at the mall?" Tracy asked with resignation. "It's a big place." "Connolly Drugs," Kim said. "Inside the store." "When?" Tracy asked. "I'm on my way," Kim said. "Get there as soon as you can." "It will take me more than a half hour," Tracy said. "And you know they close at 6 tonight." "I know," Kim said. "That's plenty of time." Tracy hung up the phone. She wondered if she was hurting Kim more than she was helping him by having let him avoid participating in the funeral arrangements, but she didn't have much time to dwell on it just then. Despite their bitter divorce, thinking about Kim brought out the mother in Tracy. She found herself wondering when Kim had eaten last. She knew she wasn't hungry, but guessed it would be best if they both had something. So before leaving for the mall, Tracy threw some food into a bag and carried it out to the car. On the way to the mall, Tracy decided that she would insist that Kim participate in finalizing the plans for Becky's service. It would be best for both of them. Since it was late afternoon on a cold, rainy Sunday, there was no traffic, and Tracy made it to the mall faster than she estimated. Even the parking area was relatively empty. It was the first time Tracy had ever been able to get a spot within a few steps of the main entrance. Inside, the mall was more crowded than she expected, given the number of cars outside. Just beyond the door, she was confronted by a group of senior citizens bearing down on her while doing their version of power walking. Tracy had to step into the lip of a shop for a moment to avoid being trampled. Walking on to the center of the mall, she assiduously avoided looking at the skating rink for fear of the memories it would invariably evoke. Connolly Drugs was as busy as ever, particularly at the prescription counter, where there were upwards of 20 people waiting. Tracy made a rapid trip around the store, but didn't see Kim. On a slower transit, she located him in the hair products section. He was carrying a box containing a pair of hair clippers and a bag from one of the mall's trendy clothing stores. "Ah, Tracy," Kim said. "Just in time. I want you to help me pick out a hair rinse. I've decided to go blonde." Tracy lifted her hands onto her hips and regarded her former husband with bewilderment. "Are you all right?" she asked. "Yeah, I'm fine," Kim said. He was preoccupied, looking at the panoply of hair products. "What do you mean you want to go blonde?" Tracy asked. "Just what I said," Kim asserted. "And not just dirty blonde. I want to be very blonde." "Kim, this is crazy," Tracy said. "You have to know it. And if you don't, I'm even more worried." "There's nothing to worry about," Kim said. "I'm not decompensating, if that's what you think. All I want to do is disguise myself. I'm going undercover." Tracy reached out and grabbed Kim by the shoulder to steady him. She leaned forward, suddenly transfixed by his earlobe. "What's this?" she questioned. "You're wearing an earring." "I'm pleased you noticed," Kim said. "I had a little time before you got here, so I got an earring. I thought it was sufficiently out of character. I also got a leather outfit." He held up the shopping bag. "What are the hair clippers for?" Tracy asked. "Those are for you to give me a haircut," Kim said. "I've never cut anyone's hair," Tracy said. "You know that." "That doesn't matter," Kim said with a smile. "I'm aiming for a skinhead look." "This is bizarre," Tracy complained. "The more bizarre, the better," Kim said. "I don't want to be recognized." "Why?" Tracy asked. "Because I visited Kelly Anderson," Kim said, "and she refuses to lend us her investigative journalistic skills until I supply her with some incontrovertible proof." "Proof of what?" Tracy asked. "Proof of the allegations Kathleen Morgan and Marsha Baldwin made about the meat industry and the USDA. "And how is a disguise going to help you do that?" Tracy asked. "It's going to help me get a job," Kim said. "Marsha Baldwin told me slaughterhouses like Higgins and Hancock don't allow visitors, but she suggested I could get a job, especially if I were an illegal alien. I don't mean to say I'm trying to look like an illegal alien, just some marginal member of society who needs to earn some money." "I can't believe this," Tracy said. "You mean you're going to go into Higgins and Hancock to try to get a job after someone tried to kill you in there?" "I'm hoping the employment officer and the man with the knife are two different people," Kim said. "Kim, this is no laughing matter," Tracy said. "I don't like the idea at all, especially if your fears about Marsha are true." "It might be a little dicey if they recognize me," Kim admitted. "That's why I want the disguise to be good." Marsha contended that Higgins and Hancock is always in need of help because turnover is so high. So I'm counting on their not being particularly choosy. "I don't like this one bit," Tracy said. "I think it's too risky. There's got to be another way. What if I talk to Kelly Anderson?" "She's not going to budge," Kim said. She was clear about that. "I've got to go in Higgins and Hancock, risk or not. Even if there is risk, I think it's worth it for Becky's sake. For me, it's a way to make her loss less meaningless." Kim felt tears spring to his eyes. "Besides," he managed to add, "I have the time now that I'm unemployed. I'm on a forced, temporary leave from the hospital." "Because of what happened in the ICU?" Tracy questioned. "Uh-huh," Kim said. "Apparently, you were the only person who thought my action was courageous." "It was courageous," Tracy asserted. She was impressed. Kim had come around 180 degrees. He really wanted to do something for Becky's sake and was willing to risk his career and reputation to do so. She couldn't argue with his motives or his goal. Without another word, Tracy turned to the shelving and walked along the aisle until she found what she considered the best bleaching rinse. Carlos had waited until dusk before driving his dilapidated pickup into the Balmoral neighborhood. He liked the fact that the streets were dark. The only lights were at the corners over the street signs. Having looked at a map, it didn't take him long to find Edinburgh Lane and eventually Kim's house. Carlos turned off his single working headlight before gliding to a stop in the shadow of some trees lining the street. He switched off the ignition and waited. From where he was parked, he could see the silhouette of Kim's house against the darkening sky. Carlos was pleased. The lack of light suggested that Kim was not home. Once again, Carlos would have the benefit of surprise, only this time it would be even better. Kim would be caught totally off guard. Carlos waited in his truck for 20 minutes before he felt comfortable enough to get out. He heard a dog bark and he froze. The dog barked again, but it sounded farther away. Carlos relaxed. He reached into his truck and extracted one of the long, kill-floor knives from beneath the seat. He slipped it under his coat. Skirting around the front of his aged Toyota, Carlos entered the trees that separated Kim's house from its neighbor. Wearing a black leather coat and dark trousers, Carlos was all but invisible as he silently slipped through the thicket. Carlos was pleased when he got a full view of the back of Kim's house. Like the front, there wasn't a light on in any window. Now he was certain the house was empty. Hunched over, Carlos ran from the protection of the trees across Kim's backyard and flattened himself against the house. Again, he waited for any suggestion that his presence was known. The neighborhood was deathly quiet. Even the dog that he'd heard earlier had fallen silent. Staying within the shadow of the house, Carlos approached Kim's screened back porch. The knife flashed briefly in the dim light as Carlos cut a slit in the screen, just long enough for him to silently slip through. Burglary was Carlos's true forte. The killing talent had been born of necessity. Kim turned off the main road and drove through the gate marking the boundary of Balmoral Estates. He glanced in the rearview mirror to see Tracy's car follow suit. He was pleased that she was willing to help him with his hair, more for her company than from need. He was also pleased about her offer to make them something to eat. Kim couldn't remember the last time he had an actual meal, although he guessed it had been Thursday night. After parking his car in front of his garage, Kim gathered his bundles and went back to meet Tracy as she climbed from her car. It was raining harder than ever. In total darkness, they navigated the black pools that had formed along the front walk. When they reached the cover of the porch, Tracy offered to hold the packages while Kim got out his key. "No need," Kim said. "The door's unlocked."
"That's not very wise," Tracy commented.
"Why not?" Kim said. "There's not much in the house to take, and it makes it easier for the realtor."
"I suppose," Tracy said, unconvinced.
She opened the door, and they entered the foyer. They took off their coats and wiped the moisture from their foreheads. Then they carried their parcels into the kitchen.
"I'll tell you what," Tracy said while putting her bag of groceries onto the countertop. "I'm happy to make us something to eat and help you with your hair, but first I'd really like to take a shower and warm up. Would you mind?"
"Mind?" Kim questioned. "Not at all. Help yourself."
"It's sad to say," Tracy added, "but the shower is the only thing I miss about this house."
"I understand completely," Kim said.
"It's the only thing we made our own. There's a robe in with the towels if you'd like. Of course, you also have some clothes here, but I moved them out to the hall closet."
"Don't worry, I'll find something," Tracy said. "I had a shower at the hospital," Kim said, "so I'll start a fire in the fireplace here in the family room. Maybe it'll make this empty house a little less depressing."
While Tracy headed upstairs, Kim got out a flashlight from the kitchen junk drawer and headed down to the basement where the firewood was stored. He turned on the light, but the single bulb had never been adequate to light the huge, cluttered cellar. Kim had never felt comfortable in basements because of a disturbing experience he'd had in the basement of the home where he'd grown up. When Kim was 6, his older brother had locked him in an unused wine cellar and then forgot about him. With the insulated door, no one had heard Kim's hysterical cries or his frantic pounding. It was only after his mother became worried he'd not appeared for dinner that his brother had remembered where he was. Kim could not go down to the basement without remembering the terror he'd felt 38 years previously. When he heard a thump in a neighboring storeroom as he loaded wood in his arms, the hairs on the back of his neck stood up. He froze and listened. He heard the noise again. Steeling himself against the desire to flee, Kim put the wood down. Taking the flashlight, he walked over to the door to the storeroom. It took strength of will to make himself push the door open with his foot and shine the light in. A half dozen pairs of tiny, red, ruby-like points of light stared back at him before scampering off. Kim breathed a sigh of relief. He went back to the woodpile to finish loading up. Tracy had climbed the stairs, feeling a twinge of nostalgia. It had been some time since she'd been on the second floor of the house. Outside of Becky's room, she paused, gazing at the closed door and wondering if she'd dare enter. Compromising, she merely opened the door and stood on the threshold. Becky's room had not changed. Since Tracy and Kim shared custody, Tracy had gotten new furniture for her daughter and left the old where it was. Becky didn't mind and preferred to leave what she considered her childhood objects in her old room. She'd not even taken her stuffed animal collection. The idea that Becky was gone was inconceivable to Tracy. She'd been the center of Tracy's life, particularly after Tracy's relationship with Kim had deteriorated. Tracy took a deep breath and pulled the door closed. As she walked down toward the master suite, she wiped the tears from the corners of her eyes with her knuckle. She knew from her professional experience how difficult the next few months would be for her and for Kim. Tracy entered the master bath directly from the hall instead of going around through the bedroom. Once inside, she flicked on the light and closed the door behind her. She surveyed the room. It wasn't nearly as clean as it had always been when she lived in the house, yet it was still beautiful, with its granite-topped vanity and marble shower. Leaning into the shower stall, she turned on the water and adjusted the shower head to deliver a pulsating jet. Then she opened the generous closet and got out a large bath towel along with a Turkish robe. Placing them on the vanity, she began to remove her damp clothes. Carlos heard the shower and smiled. This job was going to be easier than he'd imagined. He was standing in the walk-in closet in the master bedroom, intending to wait until Kim unknowingly opened the door. But hearing the shower running, he thought it would be better to corner the doctor in such a conveniently confined space. Escape would be impossible. Carlos cracked the door, and a sliver of pale light fell across his face. He looked out. The bedroom was still mostly dark, with the only light coming from the bathroom. Carlos was pleased about this as well. It meant he would not have to worry about being seen as he approached the bathroom. For what he had to do, surprise was an important element. Carlos opened the door wide enough to step out into the room. He had his knife in his right hand. Moving like a cat advancing on its prey, Carlos inched forward. With each step, he could see progressively more of the bathroom's interior through the open passageway connecting the rooms. He saw a hand flash by and drop clothing onto the counter. Taking one more step, Carlos had a full view of the bathroom, and he froze. It wasn't Kim. It was a strikingly lithe, sexy woman in the process of unhooking her bra. In an instant, her soft white breasts were revealed. The woman then hooked her thumbs beneath the elastic of her panties and pulled them off. Carlos was transfixed by this unexpected but welcome spectacle as Tracy turned her back toward him and climbed into the billowing mist coming from the shower stall. She closed the moisture-streaked glass door behind her and threw her towel over a bar at the shower's rear. Carlos moved forward as if drawn to a siren. He wanted a better view. Tracy put her hand under the water spray, then pulled it clear. It was much too hot, which was what she expected. It had been her intent to turn the shower stall into a modified steam bath. Reaching behind the stream of water, she adjusted the mixing valve. While she waited for the water temperature to change, she glanced at the soap dish and noticed it was empty. The bar was out of the sink. Tracy opened the door to get the soap when a flicker of light caught her attention. It had come from the bedroom. At first, she couldn't believe her eyes, and she blinked. There was the spectral image of a man in black, standing just within the penumbra of the bathroom light. The flash had come from the blade of an enormous knife in the man's right hand. For a beat, the two people stared at each other, Tracy in shocked horror and Carlos in libidinous interest. Tracy was the first to react. She let out a horrendous scream as she yanked the shower door shut. Then she snatched the tubular towel bar from its brackets and passed it through the U-shaped handle of the heavy glass door to prevent it from opening. Carlos reacted by springing forward into the bathroom. He wanted to get to her before her scream brought Kim. Switching the knife to his left hand, he grasped the handle of the shower door and yanked. Frustrated by not being able to get inside, he put up a foot to give himself more leverage. The light tubular towel bar slowly dented under his effort and began to bend. When Tracy's scream sounded through the house, Kim was on his way up the cellar stairs with his armload of firewood. Already on edge from the run-in with the mice, Kim's heart leaped into his throat. He dropped the firewood with a tremendous clatter as the logs tumbled back down the stairs, knocking all sorts of things off the steps that had been inappropriately stored there. Afterward, Kim would not even remember how he got through the kitchen, dining room, foyer, and up the stairs. As he reached the upper hallway, he heard Tracy scream again, and he redoubled his efforts. He hit the thin, paneled bathroom door at a full run and shattered it on his way through. Kim burst into the bathroom and skid on the shag rug as he tried to stop. He saw Carlos with his foot up against the glass shower stall, apparently trying to open it. He saw the knife and immediately realized he should have brought something to defend himself. Carlos reacted by spinning around and slashing out with the knife. The tip of the blade caught Kim across the bridge of his nose as he backed up. Carlos tossed the knife into his right hand and turned his full attention to Kim. Kim's eyes were glued to the knife as he backed up toward the broken door to the hall. Tracy struggled with the dented towel bar to extract it from the shower door handle. When she finally was able to do it, Kim and Carlos had disappeared out into the hallway. She grasped the towel bar at one end and frantically pushed out of the shower. Naked, she rushed after the two men. Carlos was still forcing Kim to back up by menacing him with his blade. Kim had picked up a broken door style and was using it in a vain attempt to counter Carlos's repeated thrusts. Blood from the cut over Kim's nose was running down his face. Without hesitation, Tracy ran up behind Carlos and clubbed him several times over the head with the towel bar. The hollow tube was not enough to hurt Carlos, but he had to defend himself against the repeated blows. He turned around to take a few swipes at Tracy, who immediately backed up. Kim took the opportunity to grab the leg of a small console table. He ripped the table from the wall and then smashed it over the banister to free the leg. By the time Carlos turned to face him, Kim was brandishing the leg like a truncheon. With Kim on one side and Tracy on the other, Carlos decided that his lethal weapon was trumped. He bolted down the stairs. Kim followed, with Tracy close behind. Carlos threw open the front door and ran down across the front lawn. Kim was close behind, but he stopped when Tracy yelled for him. He looked back. She was standing in the doorway. "Come back!" Tracy yelled. "It's not worth it!" Kim turned in time to see Carlos leap into a truck parked in the shadows. An instant later, exhaust billowed out of the tailpipe, and the vehicle lurched forward and picked up speed. Kim hurried back up to the house and pushed open the door. Tracy was standing in the foyer. She'd pulled on her coat to cover her nakedness. Kim enveloped her in his arms. "Are you okay?" he asked urgently.
"You're the one who's hurt," Tracy said.
The laceration that stretched across Kim's nose and into one eyebrow was gaping and still bleeding. Kim let go of Tracy to step into the powder room where he examined himself in the mirror. He was surprised to see how much blood was involved. Over his shoulder, he saw Tracy's face. She'd come up behind him. "Gosh, it was close," Kim said, redirecting his attention to his wound. "This could have been serious. First he cut my hand, and now right between the eyes."
"Are you suggesting this was the same man who attacked you last night?" Tracy asked with astonishment.
"There's no doubt," Kim said. "I would have had trouble describing him, but I didn't have any trouble recognizing him." Tracy shuddered and then couldn't stop. Kim could see in the mirror that she was shivering despite her coat. Kim spun around and grasped her shoulders. "What's the matter? You're okay, aren't you? I mean, you didn't get cut or anything."
"Physically, I'm all right," Tracy managed. "It's just the reality of what happened is finally dawning on me. That man wanted to kill us."
"He wanted to kill me," Kim said. "I have a feeling you were a surprise, and enough of one to have saved my life. Thank God you weren't hurt." Tracy twisted out of Kim's grasp. "I'll call the police," she said on her way to the family room. Kim caught up to her, and grabbing her arm, he pulled her to a stop. "Don't bother to call the police," he said. Tracy eyed Kim's hand, clasped around her upper arm, then looked up into his face. She was incredulous.
"What do you mean, don't bother?" she questioned.
"Come on," Kim urged, gently pulling her back toward the stairs. "Let's get my gun. I doubt the guy will be back, but there's no sense in taking any chance of not being prepared." Tracy held back.
"Why don't you want to call the police?" she questioned. "It doesn't make any sense."
"They won't do anything," Kim said. "We'll end up spending a lot of time for nothing. Undoubtedly, they'll attribute this episode to a failed burglary, whereas we know what it is about."
"We do?" Tracy asked.
"Of course," Kim said. "I said it was the same guy from Higgins and Hancock. Obviously, what I was afraid had happened to Marcia did happen, and the people responsible, whether they're from Higgins and Hancock or the meat industry in general, are afraid of me."
"That seems like all the more reason to call the police," Tracy said.
"No," Kim said emphatically. "Not only won't they do anything, they might cause trouble. Above all, I don't want them interfering in my attempt to get evidence for Kelly Anderson. In their eyes, I'm already a felon. They think I'm a nutcase."
"They don't think I'm a nutcase," Tracy said.
"They might," Kim said, "as soon as you tell them you've been spending time with me." You think so? Tracy questioned. That was a point she'd not considered. Come on, Kim urged. Let's get the gun. Tracy followed Kim out to the foyer. They started up the stairs. She was confused, but for the moment allowed Kim's determination to sway her. Yet the attack by the man with the knife terrified her.
I'm having serious second thoughts about your getting more involved in all this, Tracy said.
Not me, Kim said. I feel even more committed. Any residual benefit of doubt I'd felt has flown out the window now that I know what they're willing to do to protect themselves. They passed the broken door to the bathroom. Tracy could hear the shower still running. She shuddered anew at the image of the killer separated from her by a mere layer of glass. Tracy followed Kim into the bedroom. He went directly to the bedside table and took out a small Smith & Wesson 38 caliber pistol. He checked the cylinder. It was loaded. He slipped the gun into his jacket pocket and looked over at the open door to the walk-in closet. That prick must have been hiding in there, Kim said. He walked over and switched on the light. Most of the drawers had been emptied onto the floor. Kim pulled out the drawer where he kept his minimal jewelry. That's nice, he added. He helped himself to my father's Piaget.
Kim, I think we should forget about this whole thing, Tracy said. I don't think you should try to get a job in Higgins and Hancock.
I don't have any choice at this point, Kim said. I'm not going to give up my father's watch without a fight.
This is no time for jokes, Tracy said. I'm being serious. It's too dangerous.
What would you have us do? Kim asked. Move away to some foreign country?
That's a thought, Tracy said.
Kim laughed mirthlessly.
Wait a sec, he said. I was just kidding. Where would you want to move?
Someplace in Europe, Tracy said. I had another conversation with Kathleen after the three of us talked. She told me there were some countries, like Sweden, where the food is not contaminated.
Seriously? Kim questioned.
That's what she said, Tracy offered. They may pay a little more for the extra scrutiny, but they've decided it's worth it.
And you'd seriously think of going to live in another country? Kim asked.
I hadn't thought about it until you mentioned it, Tracy said. But yes, I'd consider it. Given what happened to Becky, I'd like to be public about it. Use the move to make a statement about the food situation in this country, and it certainly would be a lot less risky.
I suppose, Kim said.
He thought about the idea for a moment, but then shook his head. I think running away is too much of a cop-out. For Becky's sake, I'm going to see this to the bitter end.
Are you sure you're not doing this just to avoid coming to grips with Becky's death? Tracy asked.
She took a nervous breath. She knew she was touching a sensitive area. The old Kim would have reacted with rage. Kim didn't answer immediately. When he did, his voice didn't sound angry.
I've admitted as much already, but I think I'm doing this for Becky's memory as well. In that sense, part of her legacy would be preventing other kids from sharing her fate.
Tracy was touched. She went up to Kim and put her arms around him. He truly seemed to be a different man.
Come on, Kim urged. Get out of that coat and back into your clothes. We'll get the stuff we bought and get the hell out of here.
Where will we go? Tracy asked.
First to the hospital, Kim said. I have to get this laceration sutured up, or I'll be looking at it the rest of my life. Once that's done, we can go on to your house, if you wouldn't mind. I think we'll feel a lot safer there than we will here.
Now who the hell is that? Bobby Bo Mason asked.
He and his wife, along with their two children, were having a small Sunday night dinner of sirloin steaks, double-baked potatoes, peas, and corn muffins. Their chewing concentration had been broken by the front door chimes. Bobby Bo lifted the tip of his napkin to blot the corners of his lips. The other end of the napkin was tucked into his shirt just below his sizable Adam's apple. He looked up at the clock. It was just a few minutes shy of 7.
"Want me to get it, dear?" Darlene asked.
Darlene was Bobby Bo's third wife and mother of his youngest children. He also had two kids at the state agricultural school.
I'll get it, Bobby Bo grumbled.
He pushed back from the table, stuck out his lantern jaw, and headed for the front door. He wondered who had the nerve to ring his bell during dinner, but he guessed it had to be important because whoever it was had gotten through security down at the gate. Bobby Bo pulled open the door. It was Shanahan O'Brien. The man was literally holding his hat in his hand.
You don't look happy, Bobby Bo said.
I'm not, Shanahan admitted. It's not good news.
Bobby Bo glanced over his shoulder to make sure Darlene hadn't followed him to the door.
Come on into the library, Bobby Bo said.
He stepped aside to let Shanahan enter. Then he preceded his security head into the library. He closed the door after them.
All right, Bobby Bo said. What's the scoop?
I just had a call from Carlos, Shanahan said. He didn't get the doctor.
I thought this guy was supposed to be some kind of ace with a knife, Bobby Bo complained.
That's what I'd been told, Shanahan said. Carlos insists this doctor is just lucky. He broke into the doctor's house. He'd been told that the doctor lived alone, but when the doctor came home this time, he apparently had a woman with him.
Big deal, Bobby Bo said. This Carlos is supposed to be a killer. What difference does it make if a woman was there?
She apparently confused him, Shanahan said. He caught her naked and...
Enough, Bobby Bo said, raising his hand. I don't want to hear any more details. The fact of the matter is, this amateur wetback botched it up.
That's the long and the short of it, Shanahan said.
Damn, Bobby Bo said. He slapped the edge of his desk and began to pace and loudly curse.
Shanahan let his boss blow off some steam. He'd learned over the years it was best to say as little as possible when Bobby Bo was irritated.
Well, Bobby Bo said, while still walking back and forth in front of the fireplace, this all goes to show how stupid it is to save a few bucks by relying on a novice. So much for the vaunted protection committee. Let's call the professional up in Chicago and get him down here ASAP to straighten out this mess. What's his name again?
Derek Lutman, Shanahan said. But he is expensive. I think we should let Carlos have one more crack at it.
How expensive? Bobby Bo asked.
At least $5,000, Shanahan said.
Hell, $5,000 is cheap if it prevents another major meat recall, Bobby Bo said. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, if not the viability of the industry as we know it, if the public learns the true extent of this E. coli problem. It'll be 1,000 times worse than James Garner having to have bypass surgery after touting meat for us.
Bobby Bo giggled at his own joke.
I'm worried about the doctor causing trouble in relation to Marcia Baldwin, Shanahan said.
Yeah, well, that too, Bobby Bo said.
What about Carlos? Shanahan asked. He's really angry at this point. He's willing to do it for nothing. It's become a matter of pride.
What's been the upshot of this last botched attempt? Bobby Bo asked. Have the police been called? Do I have a lot of media nonsense to look forward to?
Apparently not, Shanahan said. We've monitored the scanner all afternoon and evening. There's been nothing.
Thank God for small favors, Bobby Bo said. I'll tell you what. Make the arrangements with Lutman, but if the situation presents itself, let Carlos have one more chance. What do you think?
Lutman will demand a down payment just to come here, Shanahan said. It's not the kind of thing we can get back.
So we saved $2,500, Bobby Bo said. Plus we have our bases covered. One way or the other, we'll be rid of this pesky doctor.
Okay, Shanahan said. I'll get right on it.
Good, Bobby Bo said. Just make sure that the next time you talk to me, it's good news.
I'll make it my personal responsibility, Shanahan said.
One other thing, Bobby Bo said. Get some bio on this doctor. When Lutman gets here, I want him to know how to find him without screwing around.
The emergency room at the University Medical Center was as busy as usual. Kim and Tracy were in the waiting room, sitting in seats close to where they'd been when they'd waited with Becky. Kim was holding a sterile 4x4 gauze pad against his laceration.
This is a rather unpleasant déjà vu, Kim commented.
Seems like a year ago since we were here, Tracy said, wistfully. I can't believe so much could happen in so few days.
In some respects, it seems like a long time, and in others, like a blink of the eye, Kim said. He gritted his teeth. I can't help but wonder if things wouldn't have turned out much differently if Becky had been seen quicker on that first visit and cultures taken.
I posed that question to Dr. Morgan, Tracy said. She didn't think it would have mattered that much.
It seems hard to believe, Kim said.
Why didn't you want to call one of your surgical friends to sew you up? Tracy asked.
For some of the same reasons I didn't want to call the police, Kim said. I just want to have it stitched and be done with it. I don't want there to be a big rigmarole. With a friend, there'd be questions, and I'd feel guilty about lying.
They'll undoubtedly ask you how it happened, even here, Tracy said. What will you tell them?
I don't know, Kim said. I'll think of something. How long do you think we'll have to wait? Tracy asked.
According to David Washington, not long, Kim said. By chance, they'd run into the evening ER head when they'd first arrived. He'd heard about Becky's passing and had offered his deepest sympathies. He'd also promised to get Kim in and out of the ER as soon as possible, and was unconcerned when Kim told him he wanted to use an alias. For a while, they sat in silence while mindlessly watching the pathetic parade of the sick and injured that passed in front of them. Tracy was the one who broke the silence.
The more time I have to think about what we just experienced, the less inclined I am to allow you to go through with what you're planning. I mean, it's plainly self-destructive for you to even consider going into Higgins and Hancock after everything that's occurred.
What do you mean, allow me? Kim questioned irritably while still musing about the ER visit with Becky. What are you going to do, physically stand in my way?
Please, Kim, Tracy said. I'm trying to have a conversation with you. Because of what's happened to Becky, I'm worried about whether you're capable of making reasonable decisions. It seems clear to me that getting a job in Higgins and Hancock is too risky.
It might be risky, Kim said, but there's no other choice. It's the only way to get the media involved, and the media is our only hope of doing anything about this sorry situation.
What can you hope to accomplish in Higgins and Hancock to justify the risk? Tracy said. I mean, specifically.
That I can't say until I get in there, Kim admitted. Never having been in a slaughterhouse, I don't know what to expect, but I know what I'm interested in and what the issues are. The first concerns how Becky got sick. Marsha Baldwin discovered something about the head of the last animal slaughtered on January 9th. I want to find out what it was. The second issue is Marsha Baldwin's disappearance. Somebody's got to know something. And lastly, there is the issue about how E. coli generally gets into the meat. Marsha suggested it had something to do with the way they slaughter the animals. I want to see it with my own eyes, and then document it. Once I have, I'll get Kelly Anderson involved. Exposing the USDA angle will be up to her. Tracy stared off in the middle distance.
You're not going to respond? Kim commented after a short silence.
Sure, Tracy said, as if waking from a mini-trance.
You make it all sound so reasonable, but I'll tell you something. I'm not going to allow you to go by yourself. I've got to be involved in some form or fashion, so that I can help if need be, even if I have to get a job too.
You're serious, Kim said. He was amazed.
Of course I'm serious, Tracy said. Becky was my daughter too. I don't think you should be the only one taking the risk.
Well, that's an interesting idea, Kim said. Now it was his time to stare off while he pondered.
I wouldn't even have to worry about a disguise, Tracy added. They've never seen me.
I don't know whether you could get a job, Kim said. At least not easily.
Why not? Tracy asked.
If you could get a job, why couldn't I?
Marsha said they were in constant need of help, but only in the actual slaughtering side of the business, Kim said. I don't think you're ready for that.
No, but maybe they could use me as a secretary, or something along those lines, Tracy said.
We don't know unless I try.
I've got a better idea, Kim said. Remember Lee Cook, who worked for me back at the Samaritan?
I think so, Tracy said. Wasn't he that clever technician who could fix anything electronic and who kept all the sophisticated electronic equipment functioning at the hospital?
You got it, Kim said. After the merger, he retired. He's building his own airplane in his basement and doing other odd jobs, but I'm sure he could wire me up with a bug. In that way, you can be in the car in the parking lot listening in real time. Then, if need be, you can use your cell phone to call for the cavalry.
You mean so I could hear you all the time? Tracy asked.
Yeah, continuously, Kim said.
Could I talk with you? Tracy asked.
Well, I don't know about that, Kim said. I'd have to have an earphone of some kind. That might be a giveaway. I can't imagine too many Higgins and Hancock employees wear earphones.
I could even record what you say, Tracy said, warming to the idea.
That's true, Kim agreed.
What about video? Tracy asked.
Hey, maybe so, Kim said. I know they have some tiny cameras nowadays. Maybe that could be the documentation we'll need for Kelly Anderson.
Mr. Billy Rubin, a voice called out over the heads of the waiting crowd.
Kim raised his free hand and stood up. Tracy did likewise. An ER resident dressed in all white saw them and walked over. He was carrying a clipboard with Kim's ER registration sheet attached.
Mr. Billy Rubin, the resident repeated.
His name tag said Dr. Steve Ludwig, emergency medicine resident.
He was a brawny fellow with a ready smile and closely cropped, thinning, dirty blonde hair.
Did you know that bilirubin is a medical term?
No, Kim said. I didn't have any idea.
It is, Steve commented.
It comes from the breakdown of hemoglobin.
Anyhow, let's take a look at your laceration.
Kim pulled away the 4x4. Due to swelling, the wound was more gaping now than earlier.
Whoa, Steve intoned. That's one nasty cut. We'd better get that sewn up. How did it happen?
Shaving, Kim said. Tracy couldn't help but repress a smile. Chapter 16. Monday, January 26th. Tracy shifted her weight impatiently. She had her arms folded and was leaning against the plaster wall of the upstairs hall. She'd positioned herself directly across from the door into the guest bath. She'd been there for almost 5 minutes.
Well? Tracy called through the door.
Are you ready? Kim's voice answered.
I've been ready, Tracy answered. Open the door.
The door squeaked open. Tracy's hand shot to her mouth, and she let out an involuntary giggle. Kim looked completely different. His hair was unevenly cut short, teased to stand mostly upward, and bleached platinum blonde. His eyebrows matched his hair and color, and formed a stark contrast with the dark, stubble-covered face. The sutured laceration, wrapping over the bridge of his nose and extending through one blonde eyebrow, gave him a Frankenstein look. He was dressed in a black double-flap pocket corduroy shirt over a black T-shirt with black leather pants. He had a black leather belt and matching bracelet decorated with stainless steel rivets. The outfit was topped off with a fake diamond stud earring in his left earlobe and a tattoo of a wolf with the word Lobo on his right upper arm.
So, what do you think? Kim asked.
You look bizarre, Tracy said, especially with the black silk stitches. I'd hate to run into you in a dark alley.
That sounds like the effect I was striving for, Kim said.
You certainly don't look like anybody I'd want to know, Tracy added.
In that case, maybe I should swing by the hospital, Kim suggested. Maybe with this outfit, they'll reinstate my privileges without a hearing.
A doctor is the last thing I'd suspect you were, Tracy said with another laugh. I particularly like the tattoo. Kim lifted his arm to admire his handiwork.
Pretty cool, huh? He said. The directions guaranteed it would last for 3 or 4 days, provided I don't shower. Can you imagine?
Where's the microphone? Tracy asked.
Right here, under my collar, Kim said. He rolled over the upper edge of the shirt. A tiny microphone was safety pinned to the underside.
Too bad video was out of the question, Tracy said.
Hey, remember, it's not completely out of the question, Kim said. Lee said he'd work on it, and when he says that, 9 times out of 10 he comes through. It just won't be for a few days.
Let's test the audio system, Tracy suggested.
This book is continued on Cassette 7, Side 1.